we'll start.
Hi, good morning. Thanks to Simona and organizers for this opportunity. So as Simona mentioned, Tim and I were asked to debate the origins of the Galactic Center XS. What we decided to do, we are going to debate this, of course. What we decided to do was to sort of join our talks together and split it up in the following order. So we'll start off with some introduction talking about the Galactic Center XS. Historically, this will cover sort of earlier phases of the analysis and many of the key features that many analyses agreed on. We'll move on then from there about new insights from new analyses, and then talk about some of the difficulties in understanding these new results within the astrophysical context. And at that point, these are largely, as written here, data-driven results. So at this point, we want to take a break and open up for questions. Following that, we'll talk about the dark matter hypothesis and astrophysics hypothesis in turn. And at the end, we'll conclude with some thoughts for the ways to test this in the near future. So without further ado, I will be going first. So the Galactic Center XS is an anomaly that resides in the Fermilab data. And this has been very exciting in the past, and it continues to be very exciting due to the potential interpretation as the first non-gravitational signal of dark matter. So the history goes about 10 years now, starting with a paper by Goodenough and Dan Hooper in 2009, and subsequently being confirmed in many analyses performed by many groups around the world. So the XS resides, as the name suggests, in the galactic center, but actually there's significant evidence that it's actually quite extended far out as well, so up to tens of degrees above and below the plane. The general way this galactic center XS, or GCE, is identified is through a spatial morphological template fitting. So what this means is that basically the data shown here on the top left is modeled as a linear combination of various templates with spatial and or spectral information. So by far the most important in terms of describing the bulk of the photons is the galactic diffuse emission, shown here on the top right. In addition to this emission template, there is models for known sources, galactic as well as extragalactic, and then new sources that one likes to look for. And so in our case, that would be the dark matter annihilation signal. So the galactic diffuse emission describes most of the photons, and therefore it's also very important that we know enough about this. The emission comes from cosmic ray interaction processes in our galaxy. So gamma rays could be produced by cosmic ray protons making neutral pions subsequent decays via Brengschalung or inverse Compton. So the microscopic description of these gamma ray emitting processes are relatively simple, but to model this in the galaxy is actually very challenging. One needs to know how, where, and the properties of these cosmic rays injected, including the compositions of the various nuclei, as well as the distribution of these targets as well. And linking them is the way that these cosmic rays propagate in the magnetic field of the galaxy. The galaxy has winds, so maybe the cosmic rays will be affected. So it's a complicated process that requires a numerical treatment. And there are numerical codes that do these kinds of calculations, the most perhaps popular and famous being Galprop. So using Galprop to simulate this process in the galaxy does a fairly good job in describing the gamma ray data. The nice thing of doing this calculation is that the input physics can be immediately seen as the output. So one can see the effects of some input changes or physics included and approach it that way. The process can also be tuned to the region of interest. So if we're interested in the galactic center, we can include the physics that's relevant for that region. On the other hand, not all of the input parameters are not well known. There are significant uncertainties. Some important physics is still missing. So for example, the fact that the radiation field is a three-dimensional distribution in space was only recently put into the Galprop code. The sort of resolution in these kind of calculations is still somewhat low compared to what we would like for analyses. The other approach is to use the Fermi diffuse map, which is a map of the all-sky, this galactic diffuse emission, constructed by the Fermi collaboration. So this also uses, to some extent, the Galprop simulations, but it's much more data-driven. So generally what happens is there are templates for these for these processes, which are then split up into concentric rings and then fitted to some gamma ray data. So the fact that it's split up takes into account some of the sort of a spatial dependence of the cosmic rays that are produced and the propagation features. And all this hard work is already done, so it's fairly straightforward to use, and it captures many of the features in our galaxy that we want. However, if we're not careful, it's somewhat of a black box for the user. There's only one normalization in this model. Because the goal was to describe the whole sky, it is not particularly dedicated to the galactic center. So in addition to those galactic diffuse emission templates, one has to model known sources that include things like the Fermi bubble here shown, point sources. And then for the dark matter, very often what's put in is a NFW squared template with an inner slope that's parameterized. So when all of these templates are put in and fitted to the data, the dark matter NFW squared template is an overwhelmingly positive definite detection. So this defines the galactic center excess. The word excess means that it's an excess with respect to all of these templates that I just mentioned. The main features of this excess that many agree on is the fact that the spectrum peaks at a few GeV. So this is showing one of the papers on the GCE with the spectrum shown here peaking at a few GeV. The normalization is consistent with a luminosity of about 10 to the 36, 37 ergs per second. And the spatial morphology is very consistent with spherically symmetric shape like this, falling as r to the minus 2.4 in space. So here's NFW squared model from this author's, and the right is the sort of photons attributed to that model when the fit is performed. The statistical significance of this GC detection is huge. Depending on exactly the templates used and analysis, the number it was 10s to 60 sigma or so. So it's very, very large. What's more relevant, therefore, is the systematics. And this has been looked at by various authors, including the Fermi collaboration. And so here are two examples. The right here attempted to address this question by running dozens of Galprop calculations with various differences in input physics. And these yellow bands describe the spread in the GCE as a result of 60 Galprop simulations. The left here shows a result by the collaboration showing the results here of the GCE for four different attempts to model the galactic diffuse emission. This was a sort of application of the Fermi diffuse map construction, but tailored for this galactic center analysis. So as one can see, there is significant spread and the uncertainties are larger, but nonetheless, despite these efforts, the excess remains. The excess does not go away. So, from the perspective of dark matter, the features of this GCE is very it's consistent with the almost vanilla dark matter. The energy spectrum and the flux can be explained with a dark matter of mass 10 to 100 GeV or so, with an annihilation cross-section that's basically close to thermal. So these contours are showing the 1, 2, and 3 sigma for various different annihilation channels, and they kind of fall in this nice parameter space. The spatial morphology is a NFW with a slight contraction in the middle. So the gamma factor is minus 1.2 or 1.3 or thereabouts. And this is showing the measurement of the GCE as a function of the angle away from the center. And the 1.3 squared goes through the measurements very well. The template is also largely spherical. So this plot here is showing on the x-axis the axis ratio. So the NFW squared template is now elongated with some axis ratio, and the x-axis is showing the orientation of that elongation. So all the red areas are showing where the fit deteriorates. So the delta in the TS or chi squared deteriorates. The blue areas are slightly better than the zero orientation, no elongation point right there, but this is not statistically significant. So all of these features lended themselves to a nice explanation in the dark matter hypothesis. So now let me go on to some more recent analyses that shed unique insight into the origin of the GCE. So there are three points I want to touch on. The first is the spectral similarity between the GCE and pulsars. The second is this photon count statistics, which support a subthreshold point source contributing to the GCE. And the final one is a more detailed analysis of the spatial morphology of the GCE. So the first one, energy spectrum. It'd be pointed out, actually, even before Fermi was launched, that there is a similarity between the energy spectrum of dark matter annihilating producing gamma rays to the gamma ray emission from millisecond pulsars. And in the context of the GCE, it was pointed out in a paper by Kev here, comparing the GCE of Goodenough and Hooper in the black points compared to some globular clusters that host many millisecond pulsars, and the fact that the spectrum shape are very similar. Now, there are other globular clusters out there with slightly different spectra. This is a young pulsar Geminga, which has, again, one to slightly different spectrum at the low energies. But it suffice to show that the spectrum of global clusters and the GCE can be just by eye very similar. The second point is that of photon counts. So this is the question of, are we in the left or the right? So both of them are descriptions of the GCE. They're sort of realizations of the GCE with the same total luminosity, with the overall same NFW squared spatial distribution. But on the left, we have a dark matter scenario where it's sort of particle dark matter, and hence it's very smooth. On the right, we have a sort of description in terms of many point sources. So because we've got point sources instead of some dark matter distribution, as in dark matter particle smooth distribution, we see a lot more small structures here. And if we imagine looking at distribution of the number of pixels in the photon counts per pixel, then the smooth distribution peaks at low counts. So in other words, there are many pixels with low photon counts, whereas when we have these point sources, there are more pixels with higher photon counts per pixel. So the idea is to try to decipher into these two components. So what Li et al. Did in 2016 was precisely that. They fit the photon count distribution in some region near the galactic center. And as a model, they constructed sort of two classes of models to describe the data. The first is the smooth emission components. So these are smooth, they follow Poisson statistics, and the components, the smooth components were galactic diffuse, Fermi bubble, the isotropic background, and NFW squared dark matter. So this is the dark matter NFW shown here on the left. So in addition to these smooth templates, there are unresolved point source templates that follows not a Poisson distribution, but a distribution following some luminosity function describing the underlying point source. So these templates come in three forms, some disk distribution, and an FW squared distribution, and a distribution for the extragalactic point sources. The AP factor here takes into account the spatial morphology. So once this kind of distribution is made from the data and fitted to these components, the authors found that the GCE was absorbed entirely by the NFW squared point source template rather than the NFW squared smooth template. So that's shown, so I'll take this in steps. So the left here is showing the constructed luminosity function of the point source distributions. So the disk, which lies along the plane, the isotropic, and then the new NFW squared one. So it peaks just below the detection threshold of Fermi, which lies around here. The right is showing the distribution of the flux as a fraction of the total photons that is absorbed by these templates. So this orange shows how much of the flux is absorbed by the NFW squared point source template. It's about 9%, and it's obviously above zero. On the other hand, the NFW squared dark matter one is consistent with zero. So this is where we can see that the point sources is preferred over the dark matter one. And if the point source is not put in the model and the fit is run again, then the dark matter NFW one compensates and absorbs that. So this inset is showing that result. And indeed, the dark matter NFW is non-zero. It tries to absorb the photons that way. there's some uncertainty due to the galactic diffuse emission. So this was sort of the canonical one they presented, but there are some others, and it does change the actual luminosity function. But the conclusion about the preference for a point source over a smooth distribution remains. This conclusion was also confirmed with a different technique using wavelet analysis, which basically take the data and tries to look for these hotspots of excess overall Poisson noise, and then analyzes the distribution of these hotspots in space and significance. And so these authors also found that these distributions were consistent, more consistent with a point source distribution rather than a smooth one. So in the interest of time, let me go next to the spatial morphology. So what I want to talk about here is the question of, are we in this kind of spherically symmetric NFW squared scenario, or are we in this bulge-like scenario? So what is the bulge? The bulge is the structure of the galaxy. It's very massive. It's about a third of the mass, and it's a very old collection of stars. And the Milky Way is not unique in having this bulge. About two-thirds of local galaxies show a structure like this in the infrared. So from the top-down view, the bulge is actually like a bar, and we're sitting here, and the bar is oriented at some angle with respect to our line of sight to the galactic center. So if you look at this from edge on, the object is asymmetric. The left-hand side here is closer to us, and so it appears a little bit brighter, a little bit larger. In the middle of this bulge structure, there is something called the nuclear bulge, which is basically a sort of substructure within the bulge. It's a higher stellar density, more star formation going on, and that's a component of the nuclear bulge. So in order to try and identify whether there is a bulge-like structure there or not, we define this base model, which includes the sort of base components that people had included until now. So this is fairly standard. And when a NFW squared template is added on top of that baseline, this NFW is detected at 23 sigma. So this is a busy table. Let me just say that the first column is the base model. The second column is some new component that is added. And this column is that I wanted to look at is the significance with which that new component is detected. So we take the base, we add NFW, that's detected at 23 sigma. So this 23 is consistent with the very high statistical significance with which NFW was previously measured. But as I'm describing here, there are many other sort of diffuse objects that one might be interested. So when we look at these, many of these templates are detected at very high significance. So it's not clear that just including NFW would be a reasonable model. There are many others. So the strategy I'd like to talk about is to say, well, let's add the most significant one, include that in the baseline, and then iteratively add things. So these are new point sources, NP, so we add that into the baseline, at which point we see that many of these extended objects, including the boxy bulge and NFW, still warranted at high significance. So if we go ahead and add the boxy bulge into the baseline, and then we still see a need for NFW or the nuclear bulge, NB, they're at sort of 9.712 sigmas. So we go iteratively, we add the nuclear bulge, and then we finally see that by doing this, we end up with NFW being detected at 2.7 sigmas. So we've kind of been adding these extended templates until the sort of significance of new templates is reduced sufficiently. So what happens if we, instead of adding the nuclear bulge, we add the NFW here? As these numbers suggest, they're both warranted. So if we add the NFW at that stage, then we continue to see a need for our nuclear bulge. Okay. And then if we now add the nuclear bulge, we're back to where we were before. The NFW is now only needed at 2.7 sigma. So we can repeat this, of course. Instead of adding the boxy bulge at some early step, we can sort of think about adding the NFW first. And if we do that, then the boxy bulge is still needed. And if we add the boxy bulge, then we're back to NFW being detected at some low significance. So whatever kind of route you take or ordering you take, the components other than NFW are needed, and eventually the NFW is not needed at this sort of similarly high significance. This conclusion is robust to various systematic effects. So if we take the gas sort of baseline galactic diffuse emission from the Fermi diffuse maps, then NFW is still relatively low significance. And with different point sources, so just the 3FGL or this new 2FIG point sources, still the NFW is needed at 1.4 and 0.5 sigmas only. If we put in a mask along the galactic plane of 2 degrees, still the NFW is not needed once the boxy bulge is included. So I'd like to sort of summarize by saying the bulge, once the bulge is included, the detection of the NFW squared falls to some 3 sigma or below. whereas the bulge is high at 10 sigma or higher. And these seem to be robust to these point source diffuse maps and the galactic mask. There is a different way of doing this analysis that's performed by the Amsterdam group. It's a method named SkyFact, which is a kind of a hybrid method of template fit, but with a lot of nuisance parameters that modulates these templates. So it's a bit of an image reconstruction. And when they add this boxy bulge, this is my last slide, they demonstrate that the bulge model provides a significantly better, higher than 10 sigma to the data than dark matter related contracted NFW. So the results seem consistent and also the statistical significance too. So here, let me now pass on to Tim, who will talk about how some of these new features do in astrophysical interpretation for dark matter.